Greetings and welcome to our town. This is KROV Oroville 91.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. We're also heard on the internet, krov.fm, shoutcastradio.com, and tuneinradio.com. My name's Lee Edwards, and this is our town for a lovely, I think it's pretty lovely, a lovely Tuesday. We got some clouds. I realize we probably aren't going to get any rain, but we sure could use it, and it's nice to know that things like that occur. And we have a special guest today for our town. We have Jay Gamble. And do I have the name of your group right? Is it the Oroville? We want to move that mic a little closer. The Oroville Experimental Aircraft Association? That's not coming through here. Just a second. Okay. Hold on. Greetings. No, he isn't. I'm sorry. I'm on the air now on the mic. I knew it was urgent. Yeah, just make it comfortable for yourself.
Okay.
All right. This is community radio. You don't hear this on fancy places where they edit things. This is live and lovely. And, okay, as I said, Jay Gamble's here from the Oroville Experimental Aircraft Association. There's a big, long title. And, Jay, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the group and what they do, what their goals are, maybe how long they've been around, how you got involved, all kinds of things.
Well, it's a nationwide organization. It's founded in the early 1950s. By a fellow by the name of Paul Poperensi in Oshkosh, Illinois. I'm sorry, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, I guess. And anyhow, we are people who are interested in aircraft, not necessarily home-built type airplanes, but any type of airplane. Some people just like airplanes, like myself, and they have the usual certified airplanes, and some of us build airplanes and restore different kinds of airplanes and so on. We have all facets of people. We have airline pilots. We have aircraft mechanics, just private pilots, and some people who don't have pilot license but enjoy being around airplanes, and so they're involved also. Myself, I'm a retired agriculture pilot and aircraft mechanic. So we build airplanes. I'm just completing a kit that I started about 7 years ago. It takes a lot of time, and it's the thing we enjoy doing. Now, the Oroville chapter, which is 11-12, we meet on the Wednesday before the third Saturday, and on the third Saturday, we have a little fly-in thing where you can come out and have a breakfast with us. Starts about 8 o'clock in the morning or a little before sometimes, and we go till people quit coming. And for the future part, we are working towards a fly-in later in the spring. That'd be 2015. We haven't set a date yet, but we are going to try and have a thing like we had about 3 years ago, where we have a program where we call Young Eagles. We give young kids a chance to be around airplanes, to take them for an airplane ride. There's no charge for that. All the airplanes are, of course, very airworthy. The pilots are all certified, and it is endorsed by the head of the EAA out of Oshkosh. And a new program they have, fairly new, is called Eagle Flights. Now, the Eagles are the older people, 18 years old and older, where the young Eagles are from 8 years old up to 17. And so we are working with the local Rotary Club. They want to help sponsor this fly-in for this spring. And so we're just in the early stages now of seeing how this is going to go and so on, and planning what we're going to do. It's not an air show. It's a fly-in where people just come in, bring their airplanes, show other people what they're doing, and we'll have food and probably model airplanes and probably some other things, too, that people have. Maybe if they're into cars or motorcycles or a boat, they can bring that along and show us what they're doing. We'll be on a Saturday, and it's just a good thing to have to promote the Oroville Airport, which is really a nice airport. And we have a golf course there and a restaurant right there. So that's basically what we're trying to do, promote the Oroville Airport and the area around here.
So I assume you have some sort of a permanent hangar at the airport or a place where you can meet, or do you have to reserve things in advance? It seems like year-round it would be costly to have a hangar unless you're using it a lot.
Yes, well, we have a place we meet out there. To get to our meeting, you would go to the road that goes into the golf course, and then we're on the east side of it. You see a small building right there. So that's where the breakfast is, and our meetings are usually over, though, in the administration building on the airport. But like I say, on the third Saturday on our morning breakfast, it's in the EAA building.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, we have Jay Gamble here from the Oroville Experimental Aircraft Association. Now, you mentioned earlier that's a national association. Are there any, like, either advantages or disadvantages of being part of something? You say Oshkosh is the central place. Does that make it at all difficult for communication or anything? Are they really helpful, or are you guys more or less organized on your own? I don't know if you get what I mean, but sometimes a national association and a local one are somewhat different.
Okay, they put out a excellent magazine, comes out monthly. A lot of technical information in there on people who are working on airplanes. They have things that you will normally run into, any kind of a problem you have. They help you with getting the airplanes certified. They give you steps how to go about doing that. Technical problems we run into once in a while, there will be articles on that. And they have insurance available to us. If we want to go, there are other people, but they do have insurance. We can insure our airplanes through them. And they are just give us a heads up on what's going on in Washington, on the new rules and regulations, if there are any new rules and regulations. So it is a big advantage to a person doing this kind of work. They let you know where you can get the different supplies you need. And so there's a lot of information through
all
this
right.
Organization.
And I'm sure it works both ways. If you come up with a problem, you have a source for an answer.
That's exactly right. We can contact them and tell them what problem we are having, or maybe we find a little something in our aircraft that we need a little technical assistance. They point us in the right direction.
Wow. Right here in little old Oroville. Do you have any clue as to how long? I've only been up, 1980 since I've been here, but how long the airport's been here in Oroville and organized?
I don't know, but I believe from the probably early 1930s.
Okay.
And then during World War II, it was a training base, and I'm sure at that time is when they expanded the airport to the size it is today, the runways.
Yeah.
But I've talked to some old-timers who had flew out of Oroville back in the 30s, and I would suppose then it was a lot smaller, probably.
Yeah. Well, it's a great location. Obviously, it's I just drive by, but I assume they're, I guess that, okay, number one, does an airport sort of have like just one approach, or they have more than one, if you get what I'm saying? I'm thinking about what I see. I don't see how there's much obstruction toward landing. It seems like it's pretty open.
Oroville's an excellent airport. We have two runways. The longest is at a shade over 6,000 feet. Very clear approaches. No power lines. Not many buildings around the airport. And it's an excellent airport. And we also have a golf course attached to it, which is very popular for a lot of people who like to do that.
So, sure.
It makes it to be a fun place to come to.
Okay, so let's say somebody lives up in Chester or somewhere. They let's say they want to come in and they want to fly in. Maybe they're going to stay for a while, maybe do some golf, maybe visit some people. How does a person arrange all that? Because you don't want to get down here and then not be able to land. And after you land, you have to have a place for your plane. How do you get that all figured out?
There are publications that you can go to it, and it tells you about everything you need to land here. The radio frequency, the weather reporting frequency, the lengths of the runway, and just about everything you need to fly here. And we have excellent tie-down areas. And there's a taxiway over to the golf course, so you can taxi right up to that. These publications tell you the type of fuel we have, aviation gasoline for their engines, or jet fuel if you have a jet. Good tie-down areas, and then there are car rentals and so on, and not 100% sure, but I think I've read where the casinos will have a shuttle service, but maybe not quote me on that 100%, but I kind of think I have heard that.
Sure. So actually, when I start to realize, just talking to you, I don't go out that way much, but I've driven by it, maybe dozens or hundreds of times, and you don't get a picture of all that's happening there. You don't get a picture of the idea. You think, well, I have to, I'm going to fly somewhere. I'm going to get a flight. Well, okay, so you'll go out of Sacramento or San Francisco or something like that. But you don't get a realization of all the things that are provided right here in Oroville for people that can fly. That's really interesting. What about the Lake Oroville? Now, this is kind of off the subject maybe, but it really isn't. I had some acquaintance with a fellow who flew ultralights, and he had one or two that he kept out there or something. He took me up one day, but he mentioned something about Lake Oroville and restrictions, like you weren't allowed to fly in for security reasons or whatever in certain areas over the dam or anything. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, I think that was after the 9/11 incident.
Okay.
But those restrictions are pretty much have disappeared now.
Okay.
It's legal to fly seaplanes off of Lake Oroville. I'm not sure about the after bay, but I know Lake Oroville, and so.
Okay.
As long as you fly at the appropriate altitude, which is. So you're high enough to really not going to be a nuisance to people if you're just flying around.
Sure. It. And that's another thing. I guess it's silly to ask, but I'm a land lover sort of a guy. I've been in planes, but I think of traffic, okay, so it's not, maybe not that big a deal because there aren't that many up there, but let's, I can picture somebody that's flying and then somebody else and maybe two or three somebodies. Maybe it's a holiday weekend. When you're up in the air, other than your vision, are there ways to detect other planes in your area?
Yes. If you are coming to the airport, you should announce your altitude and your position and what your intention is. And like I said, we have two runways, and you will normally announce where you are at, what your intention, which runway you plan on using, and just transmit that over your radio so other pilots will know where you're at, your altitude. And when everyone is talking like that, that makes a very safe environment that way. We have very little problems that way. Just
okay.
The people who don't talk who can kind of create a little problem once in a while.
But, yeah. Well, I think anybody would feel it be in their best interest to be doing some talking because you're protecting yourself from a potential really hazard. Sure.
Yeah, this is what we call an uncontrolled airport. So we do not have a control tower, but as long as you get on the appropriate frequency and communicate, things go quite smoothly.
Oh, I get it. So you're not talking to a tower. You're talking to anybody else on that frequency at that time.
That's right.
So you all sort of know where everybody is.
Sure.
Okay, that makes it simple. And the other sort of thing I think about is that sort of along with this is, you know, if somebody's up on a lark flying around, visibility may not always be so good. There could be clouds or something like that. Are you always putting out some kind of a signal so that, say, another little private airplane of the same type that you are in your area will know where you are, that won't have to rely on vision? I see it's not that crowded. At least it doesn't seem to be when I look up there, but I'd feel kind of nervous if I were up there in an airplane and I'd have to be looking all over. How would I know if somebody else was near me that we might collide or something?
Well, almost all airplanes, you're not required to have this in this area, but there's a thing called a transponder. Now, to have a transponder, it sends out a signal to the radar systems. And so the FAA and the military, they pick up all these, and then people talking to the air traffic controllers, they will be told where these airplanes are. But sometimes when we're just flying around locally, we do not contact control towers or
right.
The air traffic controllers. So we're going on the see and be seen type of situation in that case. So we don't have anything in the airplane to really tell us where the other aircraft are. And so that's why we tell passengers, if we have passengers, if you spot an airplane, let us know.
Okay.
And so, a lot of airplanes, most of them now have strobe lights on them and so on. And,
sure.
And so it's really not a problem.
And then you mentioned lights. Night flying, is this commonly done in small little private airplanes, or are they mostly daytime flights?
Most of them are daytime type flying. Nighttime, like I was saying, strobe lights, they are very easy to pick up. But people do fly at night times. It's very enjoyable to about fly at night. Lights are beautiful.
Yeah, I imagine it is.
It's smooth, and this time of year is a little cooler in the evening.
Yeah.
But there is a lot less traffic at nighttime. Of course, the daytime is not a whole lot either in
no.
this area. Now, in the Bay Area, it's a different story.
I'll bet.
That's almost totally controlled down there. You have to be communicating with somebody pretty much all the time in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
But up here, it's very pleasant, and you don't have much any trouble at all, basically.
Yeah, I can envision, you know, I've heard things, okay, you file a flight plan and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's a different situation maybe. But I just envision people with the freedom that they have. One of the attractions to flying to me would be the relative freedom. You're away from automobiles and traffic and a lot of things. You're in a different world, one that you look at a lot of times, but you can't experience. So I can see where people would be just, I don't know, I wouldn't say inattentive, but it'd be a great attraction. And then you don't know who's around. But you've kind of explained it that there are safety things that you people have to keep you from interfering or whatever. And, of course, you've always got radio frequencies. That's a thought. Is there a standard frequency or area where people can talk? Like if you saw a plane in the distance, would you give your call letters of your plane and say to somebody else, can you read me? Or would you likely be on the same frequency, or are there several different frequencies?
There are several different frequencies. Now, there are areas like in Oroville area that if you were going to contact the air traffic controllers, there is a assigned frequency for that area. And you would contact them and give them your location, and they would pick you up on the transponder. Then as you progress with your flight, you will go into another frequency, and when that happens, then the controller you are talking to, he will assign you the new frequency once you make the initial contact.
Right.
And if you're, say, flying to L.A., you may change your frequency half a dozen times on a longer flight like that.
Right. You'll come over other areas, what I would call airport areas.
That's right.
Yeah, and then you change it.
Yes.
So just two random people flying around, could you see another plane and
put out
something and expect them to be on your frequency though? Because they might be so because they're in your area, huh?
Yeah, and when you take off, you announce you're taking off,
yeah,
which direction you're going, and so that gives other people a heads up. There's an airplane coming out, and so there is quite a bit of communication that goes on. Once you get away from the airport, get up to altitude, then it might be kind of quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, one thing that is very nice about having a private airplane, if you want to go, say, to the coast, well, there's no schedule. You set your own schedule. You leave when you want to leave, and so it takes about 45 minutes, maybe an hour to fly to the coast and land. And, of course, you have to rent a car. There's no security to go through. You go to the airport and you leave when you want to leave and come back when you want to come back. And so that's a big advantage to having your own airplane. And I've been flying since I was 16 years old, and really haven't had any problems in all these years. It's just a nice, comfortable way of getting around the country.
I assume from what you say, not from what you say, but just from life being such as it is, when you do land in an airport, there must be some fees or something charged because the airport has to have income to survive. Are there fees involved?
An airport like Oroville, there's no landing fee, but if you leave the airplane overnight, there is a fee, and that varies from airport to airport. It might be $5 a night. It might be $10 a night. Seems like the closer to the big cities you get, the more they charge. But they charge you for the tie-down fee for securing the airplane and so on.
Boy, that's less than a parking meter, my goodness.
Yeah.
Less than an overnight park.
That's right.
Yeah. By the way, for folks listening, got to keep remembering that this is Jay Gamble from Orrville here, and he's a member of the Orrville Experimental Aircraft Association, and the Orrville branch is just that, a branch of a national association with a lot of activities and a lot of information for those interested in flight. And speaking of interested in flight, I'm sure you won't have trouble remembering what sort of thoughts went in your mind or how long they did when you were younger before you finally got your chance to get up in the air. Did somebody inspire you? What makes someone think about, or you as an individual, think about, boy, I'd like to be doing that? What happened that makes you think that way? Do you think of any specific thing or in general?
Well, myself, I've just always been interested in airplanes. I don't know why, but that's just the way I was wired, I guess.
Yeah.
And when I was a young kid, I flew model airplanes, and my dad, he belonged to a flying club, and I was up around the airports always, and that's what I always wanted to do. So when I was in high school, I started working on airplanes and just got my license, pilot's license, my mechanic's license, and that's what we try and do in EAA, get young people interested in airplanes. We give them rides, and there are opportunities in aviation. You can be interested in communications or being a pilot, a mechanic, or just
sure
unlimited opportunities. And so that's what we're trying to do, is I get young kids, young people interested in aviation.
Do they have, they must have some sort of aviation clubs or something in the area other than just trying to get a hold of you? Do they have groups that are formed?
Yes, there are different groups like the Civil Air Patrol. They are an auxiliary of the Air Force, and they give them some knowledge about military life. There are a couple of model airplane clubs in the area, and so you learn about aviation through the models there, and then of course our club. So there is quite a bit of aviation oriented clubs and so on in the Orrville area here, and we just would be willing to help. A lot of times people are working on airplanes a little bit, they need an extra hand, and
sure,
a young person in high school or interested in aviation is a good way to get started. Just helping somebody out, holding a wrench maybe once in a while.
Sure, I can see that.
Sure.
And what about, what am I trying to think of? Obviously opportunities in aircraft flying. I can just envision several. You said you were a crop duster for a while.
For 44 years, yes.
Now, to me, because that's so close to the ground and there are power lines and things like that, is that a bit tricky?
You have to stay alert, yes. All of your flying is not done really close to the ground. In our way of thinking, some of it is done a little bit higher, especially if you're doing seeding and fertilizing. But yes, you do have to stay alert. We have power lines, we have trees, and of course in this area a lot of ducks flying around. They get in the way once in a while, and but generally speaking, you're out in the wide open country, and it's really not much to be concerned about as far as power lines. They do show up once in a while, but it's really not that big of a problem.
Yeah, they're fairly close to the ground. To us looking up at them, they're pretty high up, but to an airplane, they're, I guess they're pretty close to the ground.
Some of them, the big transmission lines, you know, you can see those. It's the ones that are kind of hidden amongst the trees that can kind of scare you a little bit. But
I would think so. And so when I would look at a movie or something, which they had so much of this because of the war and the propaganda stuff, but you would see these critters with their windows open and flying and their scarves and all that stuff. I assume that open air type planes are not common. Maybe they would be more of ultralights. I mean, what is it common to have airplanes or aircraft where you can actually, or would open a window, and would it be safe to?
Sure. a lot of the slower flying airplanes, sure, you can open windows. Like you say, ultralights, a lot of them, you're just sitting out in the breeze out there.
Right.
You know, and which kind of makes it, you'd be kind of choosy on the days you fly, you know. In the summertime, it's okay. In wintertime, your airplane sits in the barn a lot of times, you know. around here, you know, we have a lot of nice days, especially from spring to fall. If you have that kind of an airplane, you would probably fly early in the morning when it's quiet and peaceful and not quite so hot.
Yeah.
But that's when a lot of guys, in the evening, a little before sundown, too, is a pleasant time to fly.
Yeah, I really am intrigued. I guess most everybody, I shouldn't say most everybody, but I'm totally intrigued by the whole idea of flying and again, ultralights. As I mentioned earlier, I had a fellow I spent a little time with, and it was quite a thrill. It was so close. I mean, we saw a coyote running across the field. I mean, that's not what you'll find when you're on a commercial flight. You can't even see the ground hardly.
Right.
But to be close enough and safe enough to see things like that. And also, one thing he mentioned, I guess this doesn't happen very much, and that is if he ran out of gas, he could only carry 5 gallons or something like that. Or if there were a problem, the first thing he'd look for would be a road. Because if there's a median or something, then he would maybe have a safe place to land. Do you have any comments about folks? I think we had one not so long ago, a few months ago. I read in the papers somebody landed on a road somewhere in this area. Is that acceptable, or I guess you have no choice?
Well, yeah. You know, when you're in a situation like that, you start looking right away and... you know, and the problem is landing on a highway is, of course, the traffic on the road, and
sure,
they don't realize you're coming in there. But there have been a lot of successful landings on highways. From my personal experience, I had an engine failure years ago, and I landed in a sheep pasture. And I've known guys that, well, they've landed a lot of places, plowed fields, you know.
Sure.
But... with our modern equipment, that's pretty rare anymore. And to run out of fuel, you're breaking the laws. You are required to have fuel in your airplane all the time. If you run out of gas, the FAA is going to give you a citation and require you to have more training because that's not acceptable.
You should technically be able to correlate the distance you plan to fly with the fuel you have available.
Right. You're required by law to have enough fuel to fly to whatever airport you're going to fly to, and then to fly to an alternate airport if you have to, plus 30 minutes of fuel remaining. So.
Okay. This sounds like a lot of planning ahead.
There is.
You don't just walk out in the yard and turn a key and drive in your car. What you're doing is something a little different. So you really got to think and plot and plan so you do it right.
Right. If you're going to be successful at it, yes, you need to be thinking all the time. Other things to take in mind, like how much of a headwind you may have, or even a tailwind.
Yeah.
Headwinds, well, are going to be coming out short on fuel, then plan accordingly. And that information is available to you before you even take off. So.
Yeah, I can see where pilots, especially on the smaller planes, I think of the commercial airliners almost as an office job. I'm not allowed to say that because I don't have the experience, but it seems like there's so much control and so many instruments and so on that it's almost like getting into this office, even though you're flying. But for lesser-sized planes, man, there's a lot of thinking ahead involved. Of course, it's intimidating to me. I'm sure as you fly more, it just becomes a routine.
Right. There have been so many improvements in aviation over the last few years, like GPS and things like that, there's no reason for a pilot to get lost. And I know I have people say, well, what if you get lost going cross country?
Yeah.
Well, with this GPS, that takes the guess out of it. You know where you're at all the time. You know your speed. And there's just no reason for a person to not be where you're supposed to be, you know.
Well, that's a good point to me, too, because I would think without that, you'd have to be careful in your planning because you wouldn't necessarily recognize landmarks on the earth unless you said, okay, I'm going to fly down Route 80 and I'll see this big intersection with, you know, I something or other. You would have to have some way of knowing where you are. My goodness.
Yeah, and then, a while ago we were talking about communicating with the controllers.
Yeah.
You can contact them, and there's a thing called flight following, and then they just watch you as you progress, and they tell you. If you're not sure where you're at, they'll tell you, and they'll guide you. They'll give you headings to get you to the airport where you want to go, and then they will tell you about other aircraft in the area, too. So there's all kinds of help out there.
Do you or have you flown fairly long distances from Orville? Let's say you take off from Orville Airport. What's about the farthest you would plan on going?
Well, I have a daughter who lives in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And so my wife and I, we had an airplane. Our airplane was about a four-hour flight to Seattle. So we would fly about halfway, Roseburg, Oregon, usually, and land, take on a little fuel, take a little break, and then continue on, and we really never saw any airplanes, except we fly past an airport, we'd be high enough where we'd be out of everybody else's way, and
right.
Then when you get to Seattle, it's a little more traffic there, but we land at a smaller airport out away from SeaTac, and really no problem at all, yeah.
Yeah, so in a way, what I'm getting almost, I can't help it being, again, from my approach to this, is that it's just all so exciting and all, but to you, it's almost like, we'll just jump in a plane and go. Isn't it almost routine to you that you think of it almost as if you were driving? In other words, it's just normal routine.
Yes, it is.
Just what you do.
You don't give it any second thought. You go out and get in the airplane and go. I know people who aren't used to flying now, they might be a little anxious about it. But
sure.
I know when I was still working, flying the agriculture airplanes, people would say, isn't that kind of dangerous? Well, the most dangerous part about it is going to work and coming home, you know.
I'll drink it.
I didn't feel that.
I think... Yeah, that's a wise statement because that's the way it is. My heavens, I don't listen to commercial radio that much anymore, but I remember it used to be the holiday death toll is. I mean, it was expected. They were supposed to tell you how many people have been killed on the highways in your state or across the nation by every few hours. It was guaranteed that was the way it's going to be, and I'm sure it's still the same.
Same way, still the same way, but... Yeah, you get in the airplane, you fly across, you look down on the highway, Interstate 5, and just, I'm sure glad I'm not down there, you know?
Yeah, that's a wonderful approach.
So, and I've been down the Bay Area, same thing, fly up out of there, and the cars are bumper to bumper, and you're just scooting out of there, and in a few minutes, you're out in the country. It's a good way to go.
Yeah, it's very, what could I call it? I shouldn't call it imaginative because to you it's reality, but to me it makes my imagination kind of expand thinking about things like this. And such another world, and it's all so close to us too. It's really neat. And I don't know if I asked you before, did you start originally in Oroville, or where did you begin your youth?
No, I grew up over on the coast in a small town. I grew up in a town called Fortuna, and I grew up over there, and I wanted to get into aviation, in which I was a flight instructor over there for a while and did some charter flying, and I talked to the airlines, and I never was really interested in big airplanes, and it sounded like there were possibilities, but then I read an article about agriculture flying, and I thought, you know, I think I would rather do that. You know, I go to work with my work shoes on, boots on, and I thought, I'll give that a try, and I tried it, and I loved it. I just really enjoyed it, and over there in that area, there isn't any that kind of flying, and so I wound up over here in the valley, the longer I was in it, the more I enjoyed it, and for me, that was the right choice to do. I enjoyed working on the airplanes, I enjoyed flying them, and this way I could do both. It's been a good thing for me.
Was there any difficulty in persuading your wife to see air travel the same way you do? Seems like the average critter gets cold feet and butterflies in their stomach when you say, well, let's fly up and see our daughter-in-law or something. You know what I'm saying? Was she at all tuned to this type of thing? Or?
My wife enjoys flying, too, yes.
Yeah.
She isn't a pilot, but she does enjoy the trip, like going to Seattle, you know, it's either going to be one long day or 2 days. You know, here we're looking at 4 hours.
That's what it is.
And we have, she has family in over on the coast, and it's a 5-hour drive or a 1-hour flight. And so.
Yeah, it's an easy choice, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, and so she enjoys that. And just going up and just running around here every once in a while, and flying over the lake and over the valley here, flying up to Red Bluff or someplace and have lunch, and things like that.
Well, it's another world, and it sure sounds beautiful. And today, for listeners, we are talking with Jay Gamble, a member of the Oroville Experimental Aircraft Association. And one thing we haven't done, which we need to do, are they listed in the phone book? I guess they are, because I think that's how I found you. What about some contact information? If somebody was interested, like you mentioned, the different events you have and things you have planned, how would they get in contact with you folks?
Well, you can contact me, and I'd help them out any way I could if they are interested in joining our club. Or there's a club in Paradise also, Experimental Aircraft Association in Paradise. They're very active, and we work together on different projects. Just come out to the Oroville Airport. There's always somebody willing to help.
Okay, that's a good source right there, the Oroville Airport. My goodness.
Yes.
They can point you wherever you want to go.
Whatever you're interested in, we're willing to talk airplanes.
And somebody asked me the other day about the airport in Paradise, because my understanding is it just goes, the runway goes off a cliff or something. Well, it's high up. Is there anything unique about it or different about the runway up there?
The only thing, I haven't flown up there a whole lot, but that airport there, you land towards the north. It's uphill. You land uphill and take off downhill. And so, there are very few airports like that, but that happened to be one of them. And so if you have a little tailwind, you have to kind of consider that a little bit. But in the different publications, they tell you about things like that. And so you just have to be aware of it.
And, okay.
Weaverville is another one over there. Same way, you land uphill, take off downhill.
Okay.
And not too many like that, but there are every once in a while you do run across that.
But it's not specifically a challenge. You just have to be aware of it.
Be aware of it, right.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, if you have nothing else to offer, I'll release you from sitting in that chair for a while. If you got more you want to say, I certainly want to hear it. Jay Gamble with the Orville Experimental Aircraft Association.
Well, we're open to all age groups. And if you like airplanes, come on out, and we'll be happy to discuss with you and have breakfast with us on the third Saturday of the month out there, and we always have a good time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming by.